going, rolling, and running, and he's going to have the... Oh, he knocked the ball, comes out, helmets off, flags are down. It was Kiko Alonso who delivered the blow. Flacco's on his feet.
And Harbaugh's yelling at Alonso right now. He's in Alonso's face. You just lost your quarterback for the game, and Harbaugh is livid.
And they are going to roll out play action in zone, and it's caught for the touchdown. It's Watson with the reception, Mallett with the touchdown pass. The chain gang fell asleep. I wonder why.
40-0, the Baltimore Ravens take out the Miami Dolphins on a strange night in Baltimore, Thursday night football, and a strange setup here. Usually hear Dan Hansis starting out the shows this year, but it's Greg Rosenthal alongside Mark Sessler, and we're going to get to the rest of the Week 8 games shortly. But first, Mark, we got to talk about a wild night that could have only ended in one way with a cat running along the field.
A cute little cat. Even as action unfolded, this little cat running, darting up and down the field in a very symbolic, strange way to end a game that I think if we could do any service to the listeners of this show, if you didn't watch this game,
okay,
listen to our review and never watch it potentially.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I was really taken by how Mark's just eyes lit up. He was so excited to see this cat on the field. But yeah, this game had a little bit of everything, kind of not in a good way. We'll talk about the hit that took Joe Flacco out of the game. He suffered a concussion and was ruled out in the second half, though. I mean, there was a Ndamukong Suh brief choke of Ryan Mallett, which felt like it's something that was just inevitable would happen. There was a fumble Ruski touchdown. There was someone getting poked in the eye. And then there was another Dolphins shutout. This is the third time this season that they should have been shut out. Twice they actually were. Once they scored a garbage touchdown on the last play from scrimmage against the Jets. It's crazy how bad this offense is, and they're 4-3.
Yeah, I tweeted out at one point that after the first half, which was an abomination if you're a Dolphins fan, that it was the sloppiest first half I had seen. And all I got from Dolphins fans was, please watch the rest of our games. And I have watched the Dolphins
yeah.
games, but maybe this just stood out as I thought Baltimore's defense, which we've seen flashes, especially with Brandon Williams back, Jay Ajayi, a 21-yard run out of the gate. His next 9 runs go for a total of 3 yards. They just completely shut down Miami's run game. And then you have Matt Moore getting whacked back there. They had no way to operate.
I mean, Ajayi ended up with 23 yards in 13 carries. So he basically got it all on that first run. And everyone who, spent a week saying, oh, this offense is going to be better with Matt Moore, so much for that.
Forget about that.
And as bad as Jay Cutler has been this year, and Moore certainly looked shaky tonight, I think you have to, when you see Jay Ajayi, who I think is a talented runner, and these quarterbacks struggling this much, I think you have to look at it. There's deeper problems than just the quarterbacks. It's the offensive line, number one, and I guess it's the scheme and the coaching and the teaching and all that.
It's funny because Tony Romo came out of the gate praising Gase, and Adam Gase, we all know, is a talented coach, and he's got the track record, but his ability to scheme in-game against the opponent and what he's seen, but he doesn't have the tools. You've got a second-string quarterback, honestly, really someone who could be a third-stringer behind Jay Cutler and Ryan Tannehill, and I just think the offensive line is not run-blocking, and he was a sitting duck back there.
He was. We should talk about the Ravens, who are now 4-4, and who knows? This is a tough team to get a handle on defensively because they've given up so many yards in the running game, but now they have Brandon Williams back. They seem to be putting it together. But the big news out of this game is Flacco takes a hit from Kiko Alonso that I saw a lot of people defending it in that he slid late. I don't know. I think Kiko Alonso is going to face a potential suspension for this hit, for hitting him hard in the head area, that even if you hit a guy after he slides to be able to control it, and he really took him out with the head, and it was just such a bad thing for NFL fans to see.
Yeah, and it was a bad look because the helmet comes ripped off. And then we find out that, his ear, he's bleeding from the ear, Joe Flacco. He's having it stitched in the locker room. And that created a wave of other violence where center Ryan Jensen came in and knocked Kiko Alonso's helmet off. Then Ndamukong Suh, who's been a well-behaved gentleman for quite a while. He popped off tonight, but the whole game had a feeling of desperation for Miami, and it got very violent towards the end.
Yeah, and the Ravens should be given credit for, they had 196 yards of offense in the first half. That was almost all with Flacco. So they were dominating this game. They came out. That was one of the probably the best offensive game against a Dolphins defense who's had some nice moments this year. So that's something to feel good about. But now Flacco's got a concussion. They've got a game against the Titans, and then they have a bye. So just doing the math, you wonder if he's going to sit out that week, and they just hope they can try to steal a win with Ryan Mallett. Meanwhile, we get the Alex Collins National TV coming out party a little bit. I mean, he's been great this year. 113 yards.
Yeah, and
crazy.
Every week we read, you know, this cavalcade of Seahawks running backs that, you know, right. this guy's trying too hard. It's not showing up on the field. This guy's injured. This guy's healthy. We can't find a lead back, and Alex Collins has looked like a lead back.
In the Seahawks defense, last preseason, and Chris Wessling was all over this, Alex Collins, and even this year too, he did not look like a guy that you would have ever expected. So you just never know, and he's had a really good habit of making the first guy miss. And so the Ravens are a team that tend to get better over the second half of the year. We know that they own these Adam Gase Dolphins. They also smacked them last year 34-6. That's 74-6 over 2 years.
That's ugly. And the good thing is, for those of you that sat and enjoyed this game, you get the Dolphins next week against Oakland on Sunday Night Football, and then the NFL has done you a triple treat by putting them on Monday Night Football against the Panthers the week after. Why do they triple stack these teams? Because you don't know what their fate's going to be, and teams change over the course of a year. If you lose a player at one point, and then you have three straight national games, you're out of luck.
You probably are getting Jay Cutler back for that game, but I don't know if that makes it.
Does that help?
I don't know if that makes
Let's ask Chris Wessling if he thinks that.
Yeah, any more enticing. We've spent way too much time on this stinker. Let's go to the rest of the Week 8 preview. Sending it over to Dan.
Cats.
The Around the NFL podcast is making the world a better place. One show at a time.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with some heroes. Mark Sessler to my left and Greg Rosenthal to my right. What's up, boys?
We've gotten a very strange Dan Hansis all afternoon today, and I think I know why.
Why?
Dan is embroiled in yet another corporate-level battle with a major enemy downstairs in our break room. And there's been a signage, it's been rotating, but it is on the soda machine, and Dan is very upset about the fact that the soda machine has been either broken or not functioning at proper levels for upwards of a month now.
You're saying this has affected Dan so much that it's impacting the rest of his life, and frankly, his profession.
I think what's impacting him is no one seems to be doing anything about this.
Mark's barking up the right tree. I like a good fight. You know, I like being the underdog. And what's a bigger underdog scenario than there being a soda machine in the break room that for 6 weeks now, no fooling here, 6 weeks, has been stealing money of the underlings of this company, which I include myself in. And no one's doing anything about it. And then you wonder how far this goes. And Mark, I know you're a conspiracy guy. I'm wondering if this goes all the way to the top.
I think it might, because I think one thing that's happening, and for people who are pro soda, they are losing out, because we have a Starbucks machine in our break room too, and we'll move on to the games very shortly. But were the Starbucks machine to break down, our office would melt. There would be immediate people in there to fix it right away. Soda, so the soda lovers, and I think the population may be smaller, they are being ignored.
So big coffee, you think, is
big coffee,
big soda,
you know,
in a big spot.
Yeah. I just wanted to be known that money is going to that machine, no goods are being dispensed, and Big Soda is still taking home the profits. So you tell me if that's something I should not be on my radar.
I think it should be. I think you're a justice fighter.
All right. Thank you, Mark. This is the Around the NFL podcast presented by Head & Shoulders. You heard at the very top of the show a little Sess and Rosie action. Get excited, everybody. They talked about...
There's the new dream team you haven't seen before.
The Dolphins-Ravens Thursday.
Discussing the one Thursday night game that I was planning wholeheartedly to miss entirely and watch maybe 5 days from now.
The Thursday night tilt, yes, between the Dolphins and Ravens. But there's so much more to talk about here in Week 8. Well, not so much, because I'll tell you something. I want everybody to be completely aware of what's going on here. 32 teams, 6 teams on bye. 2 teams played Thursday, 24 teams remaining. Divide that by 2, 12 games to talk about.
Nailed it.
Booyah.
And one of those games that I guess we'll get to very quickly is in that early London spot, so it really thins out the Sunday afternoon morning schedule.
Yummy.
A little lighter.
All right, so we'll get to all these games. We'll get to our locks and see where we are with that. Let's start. Yes, in London. Oh, sweet London. Oh, London, you're my town. That's not a real song.
Oh, London, oh, London.
Oh, London, you're my town.
Greg veered into a common show tune right there, but with different words.
Greg, a secret show tune head.
It's not true.
Look how insecure Greg is that he had to correct that.
It's not a
that.
Secret is all he's trying to yeah. say. It's very out there. If you go to Greg's house, it is a show tune emporium.
Every once in a while, you know, you're out in the real world and maybe like I see, you know, someone that listens to the show, like my cousin Justin or whatever, and they'll bring up something that from the show, right. One of the many just fictions that you make up as part of, like, you know, your little world that you have on this show. And I'd be like, well, no, that's
Did
actually
you just mimic a puppeteer.
You know, puppeteer. Yeah, you know, none of that's actually true. Dan just, you know, makes up things.
This one, not a fiction though. So, but yes, the London game.
Greg, a huge Cats fan at the Winter Garden Theater. All right, let's start with the Minnesota Vikings, who are riding high. They've won 3 straight, 4 of 5. And during this stretch, my goodness, during this stretch, Aaron Rodgers exited the picture. So things are going well for the Vikings. And now they travel to London. Oh, sweet London. London, you're my town. To face the worst team in football, the Cleveland Browns. And Mark, get us going here with the Vikings. They are in a very good position here to play their overseas football.
I mean, it would be stunning if they don't do more than simply handle this game, but throttle Cleveland, because it's an awful matchup for the Browns. This may be the best defense in football right now, and I don't know if it's even necessarily close, and you're going up against a Cleveland offense that is beyond dysfunctional, endless quarterback switches. You don't have a lot at wide receiver. You really have nothing on that attack outside of Duke Johnson, who's quietly having a very nice season, and Minnesota on offense, on defense. You know, since Dalvin Cook's been out, Minnesota's been able to run the ball just as well. I mean, with the combination of Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray. So what is it that Cleveland, even though they played a nice game defensively last week, what do you look at and say, here's their chance against Minnesota? I don't see it.
Nothing. And you're without maybe the best player on the team, Myles Garrett, who's in the concussion protocol. You get DeShone Kizer back, which I'm surprised about, that he's back in the starting lineup. That seems
for now.
Strange. But I do think there's an interesting subtext to this show. I feel like it hasn't been talked a lot about
what?
Nationally this week. Is Case Keenum playing for his job before the bye? And maybe that's not like the most intriguing storyline ever. He lost his job soon after playing in London last year. But I think Teddy Bridgewater's getting back to the point where he's going to be ready to play. He's fully cleared medically. They're going to have a bye week. That kind of makes sense as the time for Teddy to start. And Keenum's been fine the last few weeks. He gets Stephon Diggs back. But if he doesn't play his best, or maybe even if he does play his best, I could see them yanking him during the bye.
It puts them into an interesting position because you went out and traded for Sam Bradford last year. You now have 3, if Teddy Bridgewater is healthy, functional quarterbacks, and it's a lot to deal with coaching-wise. The trade deadline's coming up. I wonder if you ever would move one of these two. I would say, or one of these 3, I would say no.
Well, it'd be tough because Bradford would be the guy to move.
Right.
But he's injured. He's so injured. And
stay deep at the position.
It's a strange spot for him. He's making a lot of money and is so unclear. I mean, it'd be tough.
I feel like a little bit too much is being made of the Vikings having an embarrassment of riches at the quarterback position.
Well, that too.
They have like 3 decent quarterbacks and maybe not a good one.
Well, maybe Teddy Bridgewater, and it's asking a lot for him to be great coming back, but he's still got the potential inside of him.
Sure.
I'm kind of expecting Teddy Bridgewater to be starting, and I feel like it's about 50-50 that it's in 2 weeks when they're after the bye.
Yeah.
One more note about the Vikings offense that may surprise you. Dalvin Cook's injury, I think a lot of people wrote the Vikings off after that injury, but they've averaged 146.7 yards per game since Cook's gotten injured. It was 105, 108 yards a game before that. So
good to cycle back to that point.
They've Did that come up already?
It did, but you hammered it home with some with.
Did it really? Did you say that? Did you
cite hard
those
facts?
Stats?
Yes, but we got to it. But you added some depth to it. So.
Fessler did mention it.
Thank you.
Did he hit it with the same level of gravitas?
Not in your mind, he didn't.
Moving on.
Diggs is back for this game, by the way, which is huge for that offense.
Moving on. The Oakland Raiders are coming off what was a vital, necessary win. They needed to find a way to beat the Chiefs at home on Thursday night, and they did in the most spectacular way possible on the crazy ending, 31-30. Now they got to get some momentum going. So they head to Buffalo. Not an easy matchup here against the Bills, Greg Rosenthal, who continue to impress. Their defense has been good this season. Last week was really nice, the way they found a way to win that game, which maybe they haven't been able to do that in past years, which partly explains their long postseason drought. The Bills have a chance to make another big statement this week.
You know, sometimes I'll send in a request to our Sunday commandant, David Ely, who helps, you know, divvy out the games.
Commandant.
Sign me up for a little Raiders-Bills.
Well, Greg, too bad. I've already been assigned to this game. But I'll tell you what, I will trade it. I'll give it to you because I could care less which
trade deadline
not
coming up.
In a big spot.
I'll give it to you.
This is intriguing to me. Tyrod Taylor, big week for him. Career high, I think, number 8 on the QB index. What a season this guy's having. It was all offense. It was all offense last week. I mean, they're asking him to make 4 or 5 crazy big plays a week where it's really all him, and he does it. And I'm intrigued to see if he can keep that going or whether the Raiders team that we saw last week at the end of the game, really throughout offensively, is going to stick. Because I feel like they're not every week's a must-win for the Raiders, but if they lose this game and they're back to 3-5, it's like, what was that comeback even for against Kansas City?
That's the crazy thing about this game is which Raiders team do we get?
It's kind of imperative that they follow up that great win with another win because, yeah, it feels like they're right back where they're starting. If they drop to 3-5, they're kind of right back where they started, and you can't even get that excited anymore about last week's win. They got to win the game, but that's why, you know, I like this Bills team. I think they are really a team to watch when you try to figure out those two wild card positions. I wouldn't be surprised if both of these teams end up getting the spots, but at the same time, you know, if the Raiders can't find a way, they're going to really be in an uphill climb in the second half of the season.
That's why this matchup is so important. I mean, Buffalo is, they're undefeated at home. We've been saying it all year. They're a tough out at home. Even when they were an average team, it's a tough place to go play. They are dominating the turnover scenario, and that's why I think they've been so successful. I mean, they're a weird team. Their entire collection of wideouts has 34 catches all year.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, this Raiders secondary is so vulnerable. David Amerson getting filleted last week. I mean, this Raiders defense is a disappointment. I think it's going to prevent them from making the playoffs. But you look at Buffalo and you think, how can they really keep moving the ball like this? It's been a great coaching job by Rick Dennison, their coordinator, and Tyrod together, kind of making something out of nothing. But the Raiders are so much more talented.
I'll tell you one thing. I've just been IMing with my supervisor, David Ely.
Yes, commandant?
My commandant. I told him, Greg wants Oakland-Buffalo. I said, I can take a different one. Going to announce it on pod that he gets it. And David Ely says, definitely make it into a thing. That was David Ely's suggestion. Ooh.
Definitely make it into
a thing? That's how David Ely communicates with me.
Well, there's two things there. He likes people to be fighting with each other. That's problematic. Yeah. And then two, he wants his name mentioned a lot. Yeah.
Well, so you're covering this game now.
All right.
I will do nothing.
By the way, Ely's still single right now.
Are we sure?
He's in the dating. We might have to check in with Dave just to see where he's at. But obviously, famously, his college girlfriend broke his heart, and he has not been able to open up since. Maybe we'll check in with Dave in a little bit.
Famously? Like, that's the first thing anyone says about him.
Got dumped. Got brutally dumped in a big spot, and it took a piece of him. Let's move on. The Indianapolis Colts are 2-5. Arguably, they got two wins, but some people might say they're the worst team in football. That's how bad things are going. Andrew Luck shut down, perhaps not going to show up on the field now this year. They got shut out last week. Doesn't get any worse. Now they go on the road to face a Cincinnati team that was not able to hang with the big boys, Mark, in Pittsburgh, a 29-14 loss in Week 7. And they are, like the Raiders, in a very difficult spot if they don't win this week. And you really figure that could set the stage for a bloodbath.
Yeah, it's a total pivotal week. They have two wins. One of them is against the Browns. And, I think they're going to take this one, but I am just not totally impressed with the team that I watched against Pittsburgh. I after this, they go on the road against the Jaguars, the Titans, and the Broncos. And I feel like when they come out of that stretch, this mirage that Cincinnati is going to morph into a playoff team will be removed from our minds.
I think you're subtweeting Hansis right here.
No. I think a lot of people.
Been driving the old Bengals comeback.
The Bengals, I think, were a team you looked at before the season and said it is logical they could bounce back. But I think at this point, what I'm seeing at least, I just don't see a playoff team at all.
I thought they looked really good for most of the first half of that game. And then I think the Pittsburgh kind of distanced themselves and showed that they are a better team, especially at home. So I don't know if I learned that much about Cincinnati in that game, but I think that, yeah, we don't lock up games that are one-sided like this. But I would be absolutely stunned if
you could lock this up.
I won't do it. I told you, locks are about integrity.
No, I'm just kidding.
Locks are about integrity. You got to look yourself in the mirror. I won't do it. I think the Bengals are going to win this game. And then watch out the next week. I really want to see at Jacksonville, referendum for both teams. But yeah. I don't want to get ahead of myself right now. Cincinnati needs to show up
Marvin
in that game.
Marvin Lewis is an idiot.
That could be a problem.
It's been a rough season. Six quarters for Jacoby Brissett and the Colts. Hey, we're kind of punching above our weight storyline ended after halftime on that Monday night football game against Tennessee, and it's been a absolute disaster of six quarters since then. And I think this is a good Bengals defense, ranked in the top five on Football Outsiders going into last week. I'm sure it went backwards a little bit. They got to get Joe Mixon going, though. Everyone's like, well, why don't they just hand the ball off? Why don't they give the ball to Joe Mixon?
That's what Joe Mixon's saying, too.
Yeah, I know Joe Mixon's saying that, but you gotta produce a little more. Just the whole running game. I don't think it's the fault of the running backs, but they don't have a running game, whether it's Bernard Hill or Mixon. They don't really have
one. He had a couple runs against Pittsburgh early on, because you're right, Dan. They fell apart in the second half. They didn't even show up. But Mixon had a couple runs where you saw what everyone's been talking about. Why handcuff him this way? Just let him. Why not let him free?
It's been a disastrous week, by the way, for the Colts. I mean, they lose Malik Hooker for the season. There's a lot of drama on that roster, and I don't know. There's tanking articles coming out.
Well, their defense is on pace to give up more points than any Colts team.
They are now
ever.
The worst defense in the league. So put up a 40 burger, Bengals.
Moving on, the Los Angeles Chargers out of nowhere followed a four-game losing streak to start the season with three straight wins. Shut out the Broncos last week at home. Now a big, big challenge. The New England Patriots welcome them to Foxborough. And I'll tell you what, Greg, feels like another good spot for the Pats, because the Pats have figured it out on defense, and now everything is clear sailing to 13-3. You got to face it.
I am not buying this narrative. Okay, oh yeah, now they've just figured it out. The defense is going to be
great. That's what happens every year. That's why I'm saying it.
Well, first of all, they don't have so little pass rushing.
Literally every year.
Dont'a Hightower is out for the season. This is news that broke on Thursday. They have so few guys who are difference makers in that front seven, or have the potential to be, because I don't think we ever saw the real Dont'a Hightower this year, that his loss is massive because they're so thin at that spot. David Harris, I think, is going to be more in the mix now. You play Van Noy.
Could he have been less in the mix?
That's a fair point.
That was a nice Chandler Bing Friends ref there.
I don't know.
Could he be less in the mix?
I mean, even the Falcons game where they're playing smart, they're still giving up yards per play. This is not necessarily an easy matchup for them.
Oh, stop.
Maybe I should take this game. Forgot this one was at one. What if we switch back? We'll have to figure that out.
No, I'm not getting back into it with Ely, who did confirm he's still single, by the way. But I just think that you've watched Tom Brady week after
week. Didn't even need to do that. Definitely knew that.
It was out there as a
confirmed by society.
I think if you're Tom Brady, I mean, he's taken a lot of hits this season, even though I think their offense obviously has been stellar. And I just think the Melvin Ingram, Joey Bosa, maybe Tom Brady gets knocked around a little bit in this. I kind of have a strange feeling about this game. My AFC Super Bowl team starting to get their sea legs under them again.
What?
And I understand this doesn't happen a lot in Foxborough.
Wait,
I'm going to tell you right now something that's going to happen. The Chargers are going to go into Foxborough.
Oh, no.
They're going to play the Patriots.
Oh, no.
And I'm going to lock it up.
Oh, no.
You know, sometimes when we're playing along and setting that up, and we're going, oh, no, oh, no. Literally this time, I mean, oh, no.
I don't think it's that crazy.
I don't think it's that
crazy. Phillip Rivers has never beaten Tom Brady, which is crazy, including one wonderful playoff game from, I think it was 2009 or so. But I think it's going to happen.
All right, how about this? And I only let one person take me up on the sandwich, and I'm going to give Mark right of first refusal since it's your lock. The Patriots will be up by double-digit points midway through the first quarter on Sunday. Oh. You got to take me on it.
I will take
you. Locked
you.
It up.
Take you up.
You don't have to.
I will.
That seems crazy. I would take you up on that, too. I mean,
but you can't.
I know.
Go to the desert to find
out. I mean, he's thinking about Ingram versus Nate Solder, who's been a disaster. The rest of the offensive line has played better, but someone's going to be over on Solder's side, whether it's Ingram or Bosa. You've got a defense playing better. You've got an offense a little getting in rhythm. But I do think the Patriots will win because if you watch the last week's game and a little bit against the Jets, it started to look more like the Patriots offense. They were effective early, scoring a lot of points, going deep down the field, asking Tom Brady to make a lot of crazy throws. Not the last couple weeks. You're seeing more of the rhythm, the timing, the quick passes. You see Brandon Cooks really coming into his own. You see the whole Patriots vibe.
Beautiful.
All the different running backs coming in and out.
Beautiful.
Who's in at running back? I don't know. They're all working
Can't
out,
tell.
Though.
Can't figure it out.
Greg is not even wearing clothes above the waist at this point.
Like. Deion Lewis is the guy that is really going to take their offense now to like that scary level. I know they've already been great this season, but he's looking better and better every week. He's going to start scoring touchdowns like it's 2015 again. That's my
Whoa.
Prediction. I think he is a nasty player and is only getting better. Not a good sign for the rest of the AFC.
Coaching advantage goes to the Patriots in this game. How about that one?
Okay.
Lock that up. All right, moving on.
Old.
The Chicago Bears. How about them Bears? John Fox says, I want to keep coaching in the NFL. I don't want to get fired. So I got to figure out a way to win like 6 to 8 games. And guess what? Now he's 3-4 after a 2-game winning streak. And I wouldn't have said this 4 weeks ago, but that bad news is he's got to play the Saints now. The Bears travel to NOLA. And oh my God, Mark, Greg's licking his chops right now. He can't wait to talk about the Saints, but you're going to get us going here.
I'll get us going.
Why have the Saints turned into a juggernaut in the past 4 weeks?
Well, I think it's a couple things. I mean, they are right now, watching them, are running one of the most creative offenses league-wide, the way that they're using Alvin Kamara. Guy like Ted Ginn, that in other offenses have been strictly a deep threat, is used in multiple places all over the field. And let's talk about their defense. You know, if you're Mitchell Trubisky, who has 12 completions in 2 weeks, that was a nice cute win last week with 2 defensive touchdowns and nothing happening on offense, but you have to do more than run the ball.
The dork.
And I just don't know. I don't know how they match up. They don't match up well with the Saints for me. And by the way, playing in New Orleans is one of the toughest places to play in the NFL. The
Saints are a ball control offense. You know, they tried to go deep a few times early. I don't know if Drew Brees is – people have been waiting for the end of Drew Brees' deep ball for a while.
He looks ageless to me.
Maybe it's coming a little this year, but he doesn't need to. They're a short passing attack. You're right with Alvin Kamara. Like, to me, he is kind of the key to their offense. Once they got Teron Armstead back, their left tackle, I don't know. He might be the most valuable skill position guy on the team other than Drew Brees. This rookie class, Dan Hand.
Go, do it. Do
has
it.
Changed
Say it.
The franchise. Marshawn Lattimore is a franchise-changing cornerback. Just
did we talk about this on Tuesday?
We did. It was for the Pick'em show. You know, what's the crossover with the audience?
So what you're saying is maybe
none.
Like Mickey Loomis, who's just produced a fantastic draft class, every NFL GM should double up and take care of the city's basketball team at the same time.
Or everyone should take care of the Pelicans together.
Or he hasn't been making the decisions in years, and Sean Payton is. But they don't tell us that for some reason. I don't really know. Ryan Ramczyk, first-round pick, has been huge for them at right tackle. Marcus Williams getting good snaps at safety, a starter there. And then Kamara, too. It's just like,
why don't you do it?
It's a youth infusion. What, lock this up?
No.
Am I allowed?
That is a non-edgy lock.
No. No, like, usually I don't condone sports bigamy, but if you break up with the Pats and just join the Saints full time as a fan,
I'll never be cool
with it.
No, I would never do that.
Okay.
I like this Saints team, though. They're pretty lazy, pretty lame the last few years, but this is fun.
They don't turn the ball over either. Breeze had 2 early interceptions against Green Bay, but they simply have not turned the ball over.
And by the way, if they take care of business this week, which I think all of us in this room think they will, they get another home game next week against a Tampa team that can't seem to get it together. You could be talking about the Rams on a 6-game winning streak if they just continue to play at or near this level.
Mark Ingram, Whoa. Wes's old guy, he is such a good player. I think he could have had a better career if he was somewhere else other than New Orleans, but he's so valuable. He also seems like a leader behind the scenes, and you're playing Trubisky. Last thing on this game, I know we should move on. People got on them for only throwing 7 passes. He took 4 sacks. I think he's taken 7 or 8 sacks and 32 dropbacks. those sacks have mostly been on Trubisky. He's been holding on to the ball, and you're not picking up any first downs. It's hard to throw the ball when you're never getting any first downs and you're taking sacks.
And you have no one to throw to.
He can turn it around. I'm just saying some of that's on him.
And to answer your question, there is no crossover between our listenership and our viewership.
Oh, that's sad. You should watch Pick'em.
I got a card here. And you should. If you like our show, you can watch us on television.
Or just DVR it and
Mark
watch
looks
it
amazing
later.
Right now physically. So NFL Pick'em, Saturdays, 8 a.m., 3 p.m., and 11 p.m. Eastern. Sundays, 6 p.m. Eastern. We are part of that show with Damashek and Move the Sticks, Shepherding Logs, and the Game Money and Theory podcast.
Cynthia and Money. Money, who went out of his way, by the way, on a Damashek show to him and Sheck both. I respect these guys. They cycled through their imitations of each of us. I'll just say, I would invite you to go find that and listen to it and find if you thought it was fair. The upshot for me, I felt slightly insulted. I have been sending Money, who hates the band live. Dan and I, we like the band live to some degree.
Sending him
endless music videos, pestering his timeline with this.
Yes, that has been a good way to get revenge against Money.
He called my voice nondescript, if I'm not mistaken.
I thought he was a little savage toward you, personally. Greg, nothing you had heard before. Sheck did like the pizzeria delivery guy for me. but I thought Money came pretty hard at you, Mark.
I am going to give him a pass because in 99 interactions previous with Money, he's been a gentleman and a scholar. Yeah. And I genuinely like the man. So.
I love Money, but I thought the best revenge I could get would be to never listen to it. So that's the approach I'm going.
All right, enough of that malarkey. Who cares? Honestly, that's the two words that I have. Who cares? Money. Is that a good impression? Money. I have 14 jobs. Chargers win. It's a good voice. The Falcons are 3-3. They're the team that everybody thought was going to be just cruising to another NFC South title. But what happened? They stopped scoring points, and they didn't get stops. And then you lose three games in a row, including that no-show at Foxborough on Sunday night. So they're now 3-3. Now they go to play the Jets at the Meadowlands. And, Greg, the Jets have been feisty, but there's a very bad DNA trait that they have that makes them a very frustrating watch as a fan, as I can attest. They hang with teams. They get ahead of teams, but they don't have a killer instinct. And when you're not that good, you tend to get picked off late in games.
That's true. This is the game where I think the two teams could be angling to be down double digits heading into the fourth quarter. You know, like these are the two teams that you just don't trust at all with a lead late in the game.
Yeah, that's fair. The Jets blew two 14-point leads the last 2 weeks, and now people forget they took care.
Gosh, their season could be so different.
So different, but also 3-4 still feels pretty nice too, considering what they could have been. Jacksonville, they had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, almost blew that game too. So it's a major problem, and it really is on Todd Bowles. And I think that Bowles has done a really nice job this season, and they're one of the more pleasant surprises in the league. But at the same time, it is kind of on your coach to find a way to ensure this stuff doesn't happen. I think some of their play calling has been unimaginative in these second halves. That's led to these troubles and letting teams back in the game. On the flip side, Mark, I mean, at what point do you worry that the Falcons are broken on offense? Would you feel like they have a major crisis right now on that side of the ball?
If they don't take care of business, and I don't think this is an easy game for them, this going on the road to play the Jets, who no matter what, they have weaknesses, but they've been frisky in every single one of these games. If they drop this, the Falcons, they go 3-4, then you have to go play the Panthers, the Cowboys, the Seahawks, the Bucks, and the Vikings before the Saints. Their schedule does not let up, and you cannot get behind at this point. I'm not sure I like them in this game. I almost locked the Jets, which is potentially it's good news for Atlanta. I honestly trust the Jets to hang with this team until the end of the game, and then one of these games, the Jets are going to win in the final 5 minutes.
I think the Falcons are... They got to turn it around. I think they will. They're still leading the league in yards per drive. Isn't that crazy? I mean, they are moving
the ball. What about the last couple games?
They moved the ball pretty well against the Patriots. I mean, they had more yards per play against the Patriots than the Patriots did. It's crazy how poor they are in the red zone and being able to finish out their drives. But part of it is because they're not getting any drives because their defense can't get off the field. And that's the most disappointing thing to me. I expected this defense to kind of help push up this team. We expected the offense to come back to the pack. I expected the defense to mitigate that, and instead they're worse. I mean, this is on Dan Quinn. These are his players, his style of play. The Patriots kind of just ran them over. They were like, hey, stop us. We're gonna test your manhood. Stop us against run. Where's Dontari Poe? Where's Tack McKinley? Where are these guys?
There's all that. And then also on offense, like, the big plays from last season have dried up. I mean, statistically, yep, they have completely dried up. And I don't know if that's a Kyle Shanahan thing or if it's Matt Ryan kind of regressing back to Matt Ryan world versus last year's MVP incarnation of Matt Ryan. It's the people around him, but it's not clicking.
It is weird, though, because, like, is Matt Ryan really that much different of a player last year?
Or he doesn't look different.
Or is it just that everything last year was so perfectly made for him? He had open wide receivers. The scheme was great. No one was prepared. The schedule, a little bit of luck. Like, how could he be that different, Dan Hansis,
at
this stage of his career?
Because he was in a comfort zone with his coach and his offense coordinator. Still think Sarkisian might be coaching for his job these next couple of weeks. Hmm. They got to get something going. All yards per drive and all that's good. They got to score points.
Yeah.
And they're just, you know, I thought that was a very disconcerting effort against the Falcons. Mark, you do have the Falcons winning this game?
I have the Falcons winning. No, you know what? I had the Jets winning this game. I mean, it's not on paper anywhere, but it's audibly just been spoken.
Well, they need a, you know, come back to get it done?
No.
Okay, just check. Moving on, the San Francisco 49ers are winless, 0-7. That cute narrative, or it wasn't even narrative, it was reality. They were losing every game by 2 or 3 points. That ended in a big way with a 30-point home loss to the Cowboys. And guess what? Your reward for that is you go back on the road and you take on the NFC East leading Philadelphia Eagles, who could not be playing, Mark, with more confidence after what they did to Washington on Monday night.
Well, and from the flip side, your reward if you're the Eagles for winning perhaps the most memorable game of the year, a game in which your quarterback suddenly is national. He's a national talking point. He's been crowned essentially as like the greatest young quarterback we have right now, an MVP candidate. Your reward is to stay home for 6 days and deal with the Niners. What I want to see, and I'm not sure we're going to see it against this Niners defense, is the Jason Peters factor, that you don't have him anymore. That to me is no different than if the Browns were good and they lost Joe Thomas, how quickly it changes your offense. When you lose one of these premier left tackles, there's only two or three or four of them in the league, everything can change. I don't know if it's going to matter this week, but it's a huge loss for the Eagles.
Not going to matter this week. This 49ers defense is pretty dreadful. This team's dreadful. I mean, I think it will matter down the stretch. I know they've been playing competitively, and that's great, and that's coaching, but I don't think there's any one aspect of this team that's above average. I think they should have a running game, and sometimes they do, but that's about it. Like, Kyle Shanahan is... We're seeing the limit. I think he's a great offensive coach, but we're seeing the limitations of how much a coach can do.
I think that's fair, and I think that one guy we didn't get a chance to talk about on Tuesday that we should for the Eagles is Zach Ertz, and the chemistry that Carson Wentz and Zach Ertz have is one of those things where if these guys stay together and stay on the field together, Ertz can end up being one of those guys that's like way up, like Jason Witten, those guys that hang around together and end up just getting stats year after year after year because they have such a great connection, clearly, and he's a legitimate playmaker that was worth his draft standing, and that gives them another big-time star because he's broken out this year.
Well, I know people in Philadelphia disdain Chip Kelly and potentially with good reason. But Chip Kelly drafted Zach Ertz, and he loved him coming out of college. And it took a while for Zach Ertz to become what he is now, but he is the centerpiece of that passing game.
If you're doing a midseason All-Pro team, and I believe our friend Chris Wessling is doing one for NFL.com, I got to imagine Chris is debating it's either Gronk or Ertz as your first team tight end.
Even the fact that Gronk has mostly stayed on the field and has continued to be a major threat. In the Patriots offense, and you're talking Ertz in that category, it tells you a lot.
Got to talk to Wesley about Seth DeVal being a close third.
Right, for all I know, Chris, who has strong opinions, might totally disagree with what I'm saying. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe he's into Logan Thomas.
We'll touch base with Wes down the road on this topic. Moving on, the Carolina Panthers, let's be honest, this room, we were flying high on the Panthers a couple weeks ago when they were 4-1, and we were talking about them about a potential top seed in the NFC. Well, Then they got beat by the Eagles, and then they got creamed somehow by the Bears. Well, not creamed, but they just played terribly. And now they travel to Tampa to face another team in the Bucs that is scuffling. Greg, these are two teams that have been, especially the Bucs, kind of disappointing on balance, and the Panthers of late have been very disappointing.
This is just the matchup that the Carolina Panthers needed to jumpstart their offense, because I don't think there's a defense in the NFL that is more lost than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now, giving up 425-plus yards to the Bills, giving up 38 points, and just receivers running wide open against Arizona. I still think the Panthers have the guts of a team that should be much better. They're -8 right now on turnovers. That's a big reason why they're 4-3. Like against the Bears, they were moving the ball. Their defense is playing well. I'm not that worried about the Panthers. I'm a little more worried about, you know, Cam Newton's relationship with the media and, you know, whatnot. But
it's overall, yeah, I think it's a constant distraction.
I'm not actually worried about that. I don't know why I said that.
I quite enjoyed Chris Wessling's tweet mocking Cam after he walked off that press conference. And that wasn't a big deal. But again, it's like, dude, get it together. And then the team covering for him, saying it was some type of miscommunication. Cam had thought that he had fulfilled his media obligation, by walking off in mid-sentence. Show some accountability. Like, don't cover for the guy, because it just makes everybody look bad.
It seems like it's every week with him. And yet, you know, a couple weeks ago, the controversy seemed to sort of fuel Cam Newton. This time around, I mean, we're coming off a game, a disgraceful offensive performance where they're shut out in the second half against Chicago. Nothing happening at all with this team. And this Cam Newton has more turnovers right now, more than every quarterback in the league than DeShone Kizer.
Huh.
I know he's making some plays, but it's like this team to me is there's something out of whack here.
But I think it all stems from the running game, that it's way too many third and tens. Remember the whole, like, Cam Newton's not going to run the ball that much?
Forget that.
That whole idea. He's their leading rusher last 2 weeks.
Right.
When they need a first down, when they were on the goal line, it's like, let's go to Cam. Every single series, it seems like there's a 3rd and 12 mixed in there because Jonathan Stewart or McCaffrey loses 4 yards on 1st and 10, and it's just like, that's not how this team is set up, and they lost Trey Turner.
It's
worrisome.
I know Christian McCaffrey has shown flashes, especially as a receiver, or solely as a receiver, and that's the problem here. They did not draft him at the first round pick to just be a guy that's a safety valve and a guy that they could put in the slot and make some plays in the receiving game. I think they were expecting more from him as a runner, and that's played into the problem.
That may take time, but it's like, I feel like it's a passing game that is so reliant in sections of games on just dumping off screen passes to McCaffrey. And it's like, what team goes out and says, that's our goal?
This is a big game. I mean, these are two teams that had very high expectations coming into the season. The Bucs cannot go to 2-5 with another home loss in the division. It's an intriguing game. If nothing else, Tampa should feel good. It got a little, missed last week, that offense that we kind of were expecting to see for a month, it was there in Buffalo. I mean, they went up and down the field on a Bills defense we've given a lot of credit to. It's a big, you got to win this game, Bucks.
Go win a game.
Who do we like in this game? I'm going to throw it around.
Mark, you start. I'm thinking.
All right.
Because it's a toss-up.
I can start.
Me.
Yeah, it's a toss-up. I'm going to go Panthers.
I'm going to go Carolina.
On the road. Really put a hurting into old Dirk Cutter.
Yeah, I don't know if I like what's going on in Tampa with the coaching and everything. That seems to be maybe turning sour that season. I'm going to go with the Panthers as well.
Mike Smith defense never in 10 years finished higher than 12th.
I just hope Mike Smith's okay. I've never seen a bigger personality transformation than Mike Smith on Hard Knocks as the coach of the Falcons to Mike Smith as the defensive coordinator of the Bucs. Where basically he was just like, it was like a geyser ready to blow at all times.
I
can't be going well considering the state of the season.
I was thinking maybe that was like a game day thing, that once the game starts,
it's a preseason,
he's almost like a totally different human.
Yeah, maybe. All right, let's move on. The Houston Texans. That was a little Oprah. Houston Texans.
Very Oprah-esque.
They just,
you get a franchise quarterback and you, okay.
See, I was going to do something like that, but then I said, well, that would be bad. I'm not going to do
it. But why not just
You did it. And that's cool, though, because I like that you embraced your silly side, Greg.
Well, I'm glad
Keep
that,
doing it, buddy.
That you followed that up by totally burying it.
Sandbagged you. I apologize.
Well-oiled machine.
That was bad. Anyway, the Texans, they're coming out of their bye. They got to be feeling fresh. But guess what? They got a tough assignment because they're going to Seattle to face the Seahawks. And Deshaun Watson, Mark Sessler, has been so good this season. And he's the only reason why there's hope in Houston, despite after the losses of J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus. But this seems like a tough assignment for the kid.
Yeah, I mean, they've got 30-plus points in four straight games, which is a franchise record, not surprising for people that have watched the Texans over the years. And it's all because of him and what he's meant for them. And I look at a Seahawks team, yes, they are the number one scoring defense, and that's not an unusual narrative, but three of their four wins have come against the Colts, Niners, and Giants. So if you can't handle your business at home, we talk about the Titans this way. Every team in the AFC South, basically, is constantly in this weekly thing. You got to prove to us that you're something
more.
Every week it feels this way.
Hey,
I say this about Seattle.
Prove it.
The Seahawks are
tricky when every team in the league is 500.
Well, that's true, but the Seahawks of 3 years ago, no matter what was coming in, they would have taken them down.
Hey.
Easy.
Hey, you want to be a team that's taken seriously?
I think this is – you're doing your Dave Damashek's impression of you right now.
Prove it. Hey, prove it to us.
This is a Dan,
like
this is a Dan thing, though.
I like prove it guy.
That prove might it be guy. Me. Must win guy. It's a must win.
I like it. I like it like must wins, but I really like, hey, prove it.
I liked what I saw.
A gentleman with an IQ of 12, maybe.
I liked what I saw out of the Seahawks. I know it was the Giants. And so, yes, you expect them to
Yes.
And they did.
Yes.
But sometimes, Mark, even when you're playing a bad opponent.
Prove it.
Why even bother?
Good luck trying to get your point out today.
Sometimes, you know, when you're trying to prove it, I don't know.
Dan did not get his soda today, his Diet Pepsi or whatever it is he drinks, and you're upset.
Oh, that's sweet that you know what I drink. That is adorable, actually. Go on.
Yeah, a lot of times at the huddle, he will ask the woman to go get him ice, I believe.
Yeah, that was that a right? Strange thing for three straight years. Hey, can you go in the back and get me ice?
They used to not have the ice, and then
once
they put the ice outside. Speaking of sandbagging, I've
sandbagging the Seahawks fans
gotten
that want to hear about their
ice games. Every single time.
They should have made ice accessible. While I quietly assassinate you, I also lift you up.
You don't think that I get my own ice? Prove it.
I certainly do at this point.
Okay.
This Seattle Seahawks team came out of the bye looking a little different. First of all, when was the last time you could remember the Seattle Seahawks being healthy? Like, oh, wow, there's a healthy team, the Seahawks. Richardson's there. Lockett's there. Rawls and Lacy, they're not playing that great in ProSize, but they're all there. It's a healthy-looking team. We always pick on them for not, you know, just relying on Russell Wilson to make some magic. Well, they move the ball up and down the field on the Giants with plays from the pocket, you know, on time, some nice touch throws. It was the best their offense has looked all season. I thought Russell Wilson has played well. It was the type of performance from their defense that you expected to see. I felt like this team reset a little bit in the bye week, and now they get a matchup. You think this is a tough matchup against Deshaun Watson. I don't know. Deshaun Watson gives up a couple throws every game that there's a chance for the other defense to make a play on, and other defenses have not been making plays. I think he's gotten a little bit lucky, and that luck ends when you go up to Seattle.
Hello.
That's why I'm locking it up.
Hello. Nice lock.
I'm a little concerned, Greg, because you talk about how healthy they are. Last I heard, Luke Jokel's not playing at left guard.
Wow.
And
you know,
Justin Britt at center is not about to play.
That's a trouble. He's
and
the one
so
good,
you can laugh at it, but this is already the worst offensive line in the league, and you're losing starters. And if you're a backup offensive lineman on the Seahawks, yikes.
But he's been out, and their offensive line has been terrible. That's just like – that's what they are. It's terrible.
They dealt with that for years.
But the defense, I feel like, is coming into its own. And that's really why I wanted to lock this up, is I don't think this Texans team is getting out of the teens in scoring. I just don't think they're going to score on the Seahawks.
To your point, and I wrote about this in the High-Flying Adventures in the research notes for this week. Check it out on the end around. Steve Palazzo of Pro Football Focus did a piece where he broke down why
hey, Stevie P.
Deshaun Watson in the midst of this great season is like a middling to below quarterback in their ratings. And a lot of that was pegged on his first start, which was very bad, like off the charts bad by their grading system.
Yeah, but the first week, even just when he came in at halftime.
But a closer study of the tape, Palazzo and I guess the entire PFF team saw that he's missed a lot of open receivers. He's had a lot of, quote, turnover-worthy plays that he hasn't gotten
burned on. That's what I see.
And Texans receivers have only dropped two passes all season when Watson's been
playing.
He's great.
So
I mean, it's a first-year quarterback.
A little aggression.
That's fine, but
we're not saying he's not great. His numbers speak to a guy who's playing at an MVP level, and he's been great. But there's due for a correction. You would agree
half the
at
league
some
would,
point.
Half the league would take him right now.
I came
absolutely. No one's arguing that.
I'm saying if he's just this average guy that's throwing up interceptions that aren't getting taken down by the defense.
Are you subtweeting Steve Palazzo?
No, not at all. But it's like this guy.
I would not do that.
This guy's like six games
Palazzo's
into his career.
Hey, don't mess with me. I'm the Palazzo.
I think it's fair to say that. That
Mark Sessler takes on PFF.
Yeah, right. Please.
Comma, Palazzo.
When we actually had PFF on our show, I could not have been a kinder.
Well, the marriage went sour. Breaking news.
If you want to rank how rough people were on PFF, I was easily the kindest to them. Give me a break on this.
Breaking news, Lindsay. We have a media war. Sessler v. PFF.
Please.
Collinsworth, go hide under your table.
I don't even check Twitter at this point until Sunday, so if you want to get into it with me at that point, we can get into it.
Moving on, the Cowboys. Oh, Dwayne Brown, holdout finally ended.
Oh, class
act.
Yeah,
we forgot.
Oh, class act.
That's huge. They have one of the worst offensive lines in the league.
Well, if he's going to play, or is he going to play well? He's been in mothballs for months.
Great teammate.
He's got to be better than what they have.
I like where you're coming from on this.
I'm tired
of
this.
Not a good look for Dwayne Brown, let's be honest.
Huge for Houston, but this guy's let his team down the entire season.
And he only reported, let's be honest, it's a business decision, but because his contract would have told if he didn't report this week. And we should have said it, so we're going to say it unless one of you guys did say it, in which case I apologize for not paying attention. Again, Luke Kuechly could be playing for the Panthers on Sunday.
That's fresh information.
That would be a big deal. So track that. He's coming back from another concussion. Moving on, the Cowboys are traveling to Washington to face the Redskins. And this is a game, Greg, between the Cowboys team that looked really good, a lot more like the Cowboys team from last year, last week. And the Redskins, not so hot against the Eagles on Monday night.
The Redskins defense, I feel like, has been an overachieving group, and maybe that's starting to fall apart a little bit because of injuries. Maybe they get Josh Norman back, but they got creative last week at points early in that game, having Preston Smith Jr., Gallette, and Ryan Kerrigan all together at the same time. And Jim Tomsula is doing a great job
on the
defensive line, but ultimately I don't think they're that talented. They're just there, and they're now going up against one of the best offenses in the league in the Dallas Cowboys, who are rolling. I think that week off, I don't know, it might have helped Zeke. I mean, people were saying like, hey, Zeke, hey, here he is. He's been fine the whole time. No, he's running better now than he was at the beginning of the season. He admitted that he came into his rookie season essentially out of shape and worked himself into shape. I think the same thing kind of happened this year.
Yeah, I think it was San Francisco, and we've already, you know, taken their defense to town. But last week's performance by Zeke Elliott was clearly the best game of this season and maybe a top two or three performance I've ever seen from him. The 72-yard touchdown reception where he basically caught it and galloped down the sideline. Only a few players can do what he did. And Dak Prescott, by the way, I think he looks as good as he's looked all season. The offense is extremely dangerous right now.
Speaking of QB index, number six on the old QB index.
Six.
Dak Prescott's playing great.
Is that the highest he's been?
This season, yeah.
Who's 31? 32?
You don't want to know, buddy.
Depends on the week, you know. It depends who's starting. Like, Drew Stanton has to be in the mix starting next week, so it gets confusing. Mm.
What do you do with the Browns? Is it just the Browns helmet?
It's Kaiser.
At this point?
It's Kaiser. The first two quarters of Kaiser.
Greg, you've beat the drum on this, but I'll just mention it because there was a nice nug in the research notes. How important Sean Lee is to the Cowboys. And in the two losses that he missed, they averaged 35 points per game and 164 yards rushing yards allowed a game. Those numbers have themselves when Lee's involved. So he's such a huge part of it. And I guess that's part of the overall fear that you should have if you're a Cowboys fan, because your most important defensive player is also possibly your most injury-prone player, and your most important offensive player continues to have a six-game suspension dangling over his head like an anvil.
Next week's the week. I mean, this could be his last game for a long time. We think next week's the week.
And we're gonna find out. And I will say, because I love the way the Cowboys look, and because I'm not so hot on the Redskins, and because I believe that the Cowboys understand that they need to make hay when they're all together like this.
Uh-oh.
You know what I'm doing. This one's for you, Poppy. NFC East style. Lock it up!
Poppy.
That's for you, Poppy.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think Kirk Cousins is just about the only Redskins offensive player playing well right now.
And while we're here, Greg, I just want to go over the lock standings for the season. You do have some ground to make up. So far this season, and I'll just stick with the three of us because Wes has only been able to do two games this year. The old Zeuser, first place, 5-2, having a nice season. You're getting on me a little bit that I was mediocre. 5-2 is nice.
Little disrespectful by Greg.
I guess I wasn't really keeping track.
Yeah, yeah, well, you should. Mark, 3-4. 3-4.
Workmanlike.
Yeah, second place, no, Greg.
3-5 after this
3-4
week.
Is terrible. 5-2 is like the expectation.
Hold on.
And 2-5 is even worse. 5-2 is what we probably all averaged on last year. That's if it's a lock of the week, you better be way above 500.
This is a lock. This is like the
if you're below 500, it's a total embarrassment.
But we don't gauge the daring level of the picks.
Listen, this is the gentleman's lock contest. It's a game where we respect each other and we make picks. We're not just going to pick against the Niners every week. Well,
I've locked the Jets and Browns this year.
Greg is 2-5 for the season. And then all-time standings, Wes is 10-9. Greg, third place, 13-11. So you weren't locking it up last year too well either, let's be honest.
What are you talking about? Do the math. So
I can.
Do it. Do it.
All right, I will.
13-11. I was then 11-6, which is pretty much the exact same percentage as 5-2. That's what I'm saying.
Pretty solid.
13-10 all-time, Mark Sessler, which is second place, half game ahead of Greg. And
I'll take it.
The old Zeuser, once again. Old know-nothing Zeuser, 17-9.
Get your Dan Hanses.
The old idiot Hanses upstairs Hanses while the scientists Hanses are down in the basement.
Hey, that's what you took on. That was your whole bit. Now you're turning your own bits against us.
I'm weaponizing them.
You got people trying to get down into the lab and disrupt enemies. Dan's up there punching them out.
Drinking vodka upstairs.
Dan's the security guard smoking cigarettes at the door.
Yeah, I'm the bouncer upstairs. Okay, anyway, let's wrap this thing up. Let's go to the Steelers heading to Detroit to face the Lions. Steelers starting to get saucy looking. I like the way they closed out that game against Cincinnati. They looked like the best team in the AFC North, and it wasn't close. And now you got the Lions who, you know, they didn't show up in their game before the bye. They get a chance to get healthy here during the bye mark. But let us not forget the 50 burger dropped in them the week before.
Yeah, I think it's easy when these teams go on bye to kind of forget what happened the week before. And that was a game where Matthew Stafford strip sack for a touchdown, strip sack a second time, 12 passes batted down, running for his life all over the place. And now you're going up against the Steelers defense. And every week, Ryan Shazier is showing up. How about against the Bengals? Mike Hilton laying a hit on players. TJ Watt, Bud Dupree. They've got guys all over the place. And everyone, every week, it's Martavis Bryant itching about his role and Antonio Brown.
He wants to ball.
Yeah, I mean, give me a break. It's always the Steelers offense. It's the Steelers defense that makes them a different team than in years past and a true threat in the AFC.
Right. They haven't needed Ben Roethlisberger to play that well. I think he's coming off his best game of the season. But before that, he's just been kind of workmanlike. Whereas the Lions, you expected that this was going to be an offense first team. I just feel like that's where their money is. That's what you expect. And then when you look at the numbers, I mean, they are one of the worst offenses in the league.
They feel broken
consistently gaining yards. I don't think they're that far away. Like, their running game is a little better than it was a year ago. Stafford has some players to throw to. I think they have a chance to get better.
We've been talking about Le'Veon Bell's workload. I looked it up earlier today, and he is on pace for 461 touches. That would place him second all time if this usage rate continued. The only guy that's ahead of him would be poor James Wilder, which I wish Wes was here.
He'd be from able the to Bucks.
A nice breakdown of his career. In the 84 Bucks, he had 492 touches. That feels like it should have been a criminal charge against the man.
That offense had nothing.
And remember the last time we heard this idea that, the football cognoscenti wondering if a running back was being maxed out in a nefarious way, DeMarco Murray back in 2014, he ended up with 449 touches for that Cowboys team. So they're using him.
And it hurt him.
Even more than DeMarco Murray. And it makes you wonder what their long-term plans are.
Well, and then through the air.
Why did you draft James Conner if you can't give him 5-6 carries a game?
Couldn't agree more. I mean, he's looked better than ever. So there's that. But it's also October. You need to be fresh. They didn't have him. He went out in the first quarter of the AFC Championship game last year, first half. They didn't have him in the playoffs a couple times before that. You've got to maximize like your roster heading towards January.
You know what I don't want to say? As a football fan, well, I'm a Patriots hater too, but as a football fan, I don't want to see Le'Veon Bell going out of the first half of the AFC title game with a hamstring injury or a bulky knee that it acts up on him during a first quarter run. And then he'll be like, oh, just bad luck again in January. But no, it's like this idea, you did get James Conner in the draft. You love him. You love his ability. Work them together because it might help you in the long run. Even if he's winning you games right now, you got to look big picture.
I mean, what about Antonio Brown, the way that he's being used in the passing game? It's right. Like they had these two-star players and –
it's very imbalanced.
It seems like it's such a top-heavy offense.
Martavis Bryant officially will be inactive for this game. Not a huge loss for them, and we'll see if it's his final week in a Steelers uniform.
Trade deadline Tuesday.
Despite what Mike Tomlin said publicly, I think they would be willing to listen to if anyone came calling for Martavis Bryant. I love that Cowboys fit. It just feels like a Cowboys move.
Yeah, I could see it. Moving on, finally, so that was the Sunday night game. The Monday night football game, the Denver Broncos, who got shut out and just looked, pitiful now for 2 weeks in a row, shut out by the Chargers last week on the road. Now they have to head to Kansas City. And I'll tell you what, Greg, the Chiefs, they have major problems. I don't think they could really stop a good team or a desperate team like we saw with Oakland last week on defense when it really comes down to it. I think that could maybe haunt them if they don't figure something out. But right now, the here and now, they're angry after last week. They're 5-2. I think this is a terrible recipe for Denver to get back on track. Do you agree or disagree?
Winning in Kansas City, a team that's just played much better than them, yeah, is a terrible matchup in a week where you're already struggling. The strengths of both teams match up against each other, though. I mean, the Chiefs in Football Outsiders have the number one offense in football right now, and that makes sense to me. But they're going up against a very good Broncos defense who's really been at the level we expected. They have nothing to do with these last two losses. I mean, they gave up 14 points to the Chargers on like 15 drives. They gave up 13 points to the Giants. I'm talking about just to the offenses. And the Chiefs defense, though, is 25 and sinking. 25th in the league and sinking in football. It's not a good defense. So if you can't put up some points against Kansas City, you're not going to do it against anyone.
I think they've had injuries, and this is the only top five defense that the Chiefs will face outside of Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh, we saw what happened there.
Pittsburgh, by the way, top five in offense and defense in Football Outsiders. Easily the number one team in the NFL right now. How about that?
Really? Saucy. Right. This is a big, big week, though, Greg.
I know that's off topic.
A big, an important game for the Broncos who are trying to get their season back on track. Speaking of on track, you need the Team Trev Express.
Needs to get back.
To chug along upon those tracks. We don't want another derailment 3 weeks in a row.
Team Trev. An upgrade. Oh.
That feels like a tragedy.
I mean, it feels
Many
like
fatalities.
It feels like he's just being asked to make plays throwing on the run that he's just not going to make, that they haven't had a running game at all the last 2 weeks. When they try to, get those cheap screen yards that Alex Smith gets or a lot of quarterbacks get. It's like that doesn't happen for the Broncos. It's been tough to watch the last few weeks, and he's been a huge part of it. He's owned up to that.
Yeah, I mean, only Kaiser and Flacco have a worse QB rating than Simeon since week three. And after this game, you have to go into Philadelphia, then play the Patriots if you're the Broncos. Season on the brink.
They've had a million. It's not like they've been playing the 85 Bears the last couple weeks either. They played the Chargers and the Giants, who have been okay.
That Giant loss might have sapped them of their mojo.
They combined 10 points against the Giants and Chargers.
All right.
It's wild. And Simeon's tough. He took two of the biggest hits I've ever seen a quarterback take in my life in that game against the Chargers. Got right back up, and I don't know. There's only so many hits I feel like he could take.
How about you call up tape a Super Bowl 25, Jeff Hostetler back in his own end zone. Bruce Smith blows around the blind side, wallops him. He holds on to the ball. Giants win 2019.
A game where he thought that he had essentially broken a bone early on and came back to win.
It's a big game for the Chiefs, by the way. Big game. They
very
can't
big
lose.
Game.
I'm just saying.
You didn't like my Hostetler?
I liked it. I liked it. I'm just saying.
You remember Jeff Hostetler's Chiefs Raiders run?
He was nice. He was a nice player on the Raiders.
Yeah.
Nice career for Jeff Hostetler. Mm-hmm.
One of those quarterbacks with a mustache from Wire to Wire.
Very sexy.
Mustachioed.
NFL Pick'em once again. Saturdays, 8 a.m., 3 p.m., and 11 p.m. Eastern. Sundays at 6 a.m. Eastern. Check out the Around the NFL subreddit. And again, please rate and subscribe to the Around the NFL podcast. And one last note, we are working on the Spotify situation. Everybody getting upset. I got a feeling, though, the people that are coming at us on Twitter and are annoyed, and I understand it. There are other ways to find the podcast. So please don't give up on us, Dad. You probably aren't listening, maybe.
Well, that's the thing. Right, if you're looking for it on Spotify, you've probably not gotten this update.
If you're grudgingly listening on some type of platform that you're not happy with, I checked in personally with the Shadowy League figures yesterday on email. We're trying to get this thing figured out, and hopefully at the end of the day it will be. That's it. That's the Spotify.
They are moving at a methodical pace to fix this problem.
All right. Let's go. Next time you hear from us, it will be the Sunday night flagship show. So don't give up on us, Dad. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the boss, and Lindy Falta behind the glass. Till Sunday.